Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles presented by Bolin Media. Please respect and enjoy the podcast. I am Brother Ross here with Brother Barrett, whose birthday was yesterday. Happy name day, Brother Barrett.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And it was really only my birthday, you know, if you're considering, you know, earthly laps around the sun, which
right.
is the center of our solar system.
And not counting the cryosleep.
Not counting all my cryosleep and you know, jetting off and getting on whisper ships and just like bouncing around the galaxy and hanging with the spacers and
oh sure.
You know, just doing all my spacely activities, then you know it's not who knows when my birthday is if you factor all that in.
Oh sure, hon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Brother Barrett, I would like to remind you that you cannot unvoice during the show today. You have to actually talk. It's
good.
A podcast.
Well, that's fine, because I'm so far away from finding my pitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not happening for me. I'm really trying, but all I'm doing is yelling out on the inside.
Which is not the same.
It's not the same.
It's
not unvoicing.
And I would also like to remind you that it would be appreciated if you did not hack my microphone in the middle of the show here.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
All right, let's get back into Foundation. Let's start with episode 6 of season 2, titled Why the Gods Made Wine, which I don't remember why it was titled that.
They do mention it. They mention it. It's not really, like, it doesn't make a ton of sense. I think it comes from Queen Sereth. Not that it doesn't make sense. It didn't end up being as profound as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But she basically like the gods made wine so that no. It's not it's from Tell 'em.
Yeah.
Go tell 'em on the mountain.
Or Soulja Boy Tell 'em.
Soulja Boy Tell 'em.
Yeah.
Soulja Boy Tell 'em. Yeah,
yeah.
There you go. That's a better one.
They both work.
She's talking about like some shit. Now I can't remember who said it.
See? See?
Basically, the gods made wine so that people that weren't gods could tolerate pain.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That was, I believe, the metaphor there.
Well, we start off with Salvor, Gale, and Harry seemingly in a bit of a pickle on Ignis with this leader of the Mentallics known as Soulja Boy Tell 'em.
Ignis. That's Ignis.
And these psychic Mentallic weirdos are doing some serious like mind infiltration stuff. Like they're messing with Salvor's dreams mm-hmm. and Harry's thoughts, and you can tell pretty plainly when something fishy is going on because they use this funky filter on the screen.
Right.
They really lay it on thick,
yeah.
So that everything looks a little blurry and weird
right.
to let you know, like, hey, something isn't right here.
Yeah, that's the problem with a planet filled with nothing but Mentallics and psychics and you know, people that can do stuff with their minds.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, gets a little
blurry out there.
Yeah, it does.
It's sticky, as Tell'em and Gale might say.
Indeed. Salvor meets some kid on the beach named Josiah, and he uses his telepathy, which they call unvoicing, to show her his life story, and then Salvor is shown that Tell'em basically saved all of her followers' lives in one way or another in that scene where they all very creepily surround her and force their life stories onto her, onto her brain. Then Tell'em tells Harry, Salvor, and Gale that the sighted are either seen as gods or villains, right? One way or the other. And that's why she's built this community and started gathering all these Mentallics, all these psychic-powered people.
Yes, the god thing gets old quickly, as she says, and the villains thing leads to that's when they want to bleed you.
Yeah, so they're holed up here to avoid persecution and harm.
Yeah.
As a result of their powers. So Harry explains to Tell'em that he needs the Mentallics and believes they were drawn here to create the Second Foundation and save the world, but Tell'em is not into it, so Harry proceeds to tell her about Gale's ability to see the future and the far-off threat of some super Mentallic, the Mule.
The Mule.
Which I don't think before this episode I even realized. Like, we had no reason to believe the Mule was a Mentallic before. Well, I guess he did kind of say he knew who she was. He could see that she was there from the past, like looking into the future or whatever. So
right.
I had not connected those
dots.
Yeah, though.
I hadn't either. But it all tracks when he says that, right? Because the mule can kind of like, it seems to be kind of like traveling through her mind as well, right? When they touch, he's got all of that happening. He's got the gift of sight as well, maybe.
Yeah. So Gail shows Tellum her premonition to to prove the dangers that this community apparently will one day face, and then Tellum is like blown away by Gail's power to see the future, and she gets Gail by herself and tells her like, hey, you know, I'm sick, I'm dying. She keeps coughing. Mm-hmm. She's doing like the Zoolander after he's in the coal mines.
Yeah,
like,
she's got the black lung pop.
Exactly. Yeah. And she tells Gail she wants her to be the leader of the Mentallics, clearly once she passes on, because Gail is so gifted. And she promises in exchange to like train her in the ways of the Mentallic and keep Salvor James Harden safe, but says that Harry cannot be a part of this.
Yeah.
Like, he's out.
He's got to go.
Basically, Harry's out. You can stay.
Don't trust that one. I don't like him.
Yeah.
One bit.
Yeah. So Harry ends up getting really suspicious and tells Salvor, but not Gail, that Tellum is after the Prime Radiant. And that Harry had Gail hide it, but he doesn't know where it is, so he needs Salvor to go and look for it. I don't feel like there's that many places that she could have hidden it, but I don't know. Salvor also tells Harry that maybe he got that. Basically, maybe you were given a body, a human body again. Because remember that whole thing where he was dead, and then now all of a sudden he's got a body again. Maybe he was resurrected into an actual human body so that he becomes vulnerable and stops thinking of people as just math,
as numbers. Yeah. Gets a little skin in the game for himself.
Yeah,
as it were.
Yeah, nice little pun she dropped in there about having skin in the game. She actually uses that line.
Right.
So later, Salvor and Gail see Harry escaping in Salvor's ship, but that's actually just a vision that these Mentallics gave them to confuse them and think that Harry was abandoning them.
Yeah, it didn't even need to be a vision, I don't think, remember, because they can just turn one of themselves into somebody else.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about
so
that.
They just sent somebody to move the ship, basically, and make it look like it was Harry stealing the ship away.
Yeah, they can look like anybody.
They can look like anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so they're being tricksy hobbitses.
Powerful people, these Mentallics.
And yeah, it kind of factors into the whole thing that that we are witnessing, and that makes the you know, we don't really know what's real and what's not, and who's telling the truth. As Harry says, you can't really even trust your own mind on this place, because they can manipulate or nudge you to see things, feel things, make certain movements. You know, as we see in the kind of the ship conversation between Gail and Tellum. You know, she like, right. There's like that, it's all very Yoda-esque almost. And it's you know, questioning with questions and answering with more, the whole thing is just very like, riddle-esque, right?
Yeah.
She's like, you made me do that. And she's like, how can I make you do something that you already had done? Right. There's like some back and forth like that I can't quite remember, but yeah.
The real Harry.
A lot happening here on Ignis.
Yeah, Harry himself is actually being drowned to death by Tellum. Like, very old school. They've got him tied up there in the water.
Very
while
medieval.
The tide is rising,
yeah.
She tells Harry that she will find and destroy the Prime Radiant, and there is nothing he can do to stop her. Like, insert evil laugh here. So, as Harry is drowning, I guess his like life is flashing before his eyes, and we get all these flashbacks. Like, we see him as a child using math and charts to avoid a stampede of space dragons, which are known as moon shrikes, apparently. I looked it up.
Moon shrieks.
Yeah. Then we see him meeting his wife, Yana, and how their relationship comes to be. Like, they met each other, you know, I guess she was a new student or employee.
She's a new professor. She's there to study data analytics type stuff, and he's got the theorizing down, and she's there because she's a hard numbers type of person, and like the two of them, their dual expertise are going to combine to kind of like perfect
psycho history
and create the prime radiant essentially.
Yes, yeah. She kind of jabs at him like your theory is genius. You've got something going here, but you need it to be like, you know, more fully formed.
Right. Yeah.
And that's
exactly
what she brings.
That's what she brings to the table. That's exactly right.
So Yana ends up getting pregnant. But then Empire is worried about Psycho History and the Prime Radiant and what those things could do to his reign. So they basically tell Harry and Yana, like, look, you have this position on Trantor where Empire can clearly keep a closer watch on them, right?
Yeah,
keep
at Streeling University, which you'll remember is where Harry is a professor when we first meet him.
And where Gale first meets him
on Trantor as a professor at Streeling University. So this is all leading up to how he got to Streeling.
Yes, yeah, where we found him in season one.
Yeah, and that offer is made to them essentially to confiscate the work, essentially keep it close to the seat of power.
Right.
And of course, knowing Harry, he doesn't like that offer.
Which is ironic because first Empire brings him in closer where they can monitor him because they're concerned about Psycho History and everything he's saying. Mm-hmm. And then eventually they send him to the Outer Reach. They're like, never mind. This is too close. Yeah. We're going to put you somewhere where you don't matter anymore. But this Dr. Todd that is dropping all this on Harry, telling him, like, you're going to have to move to this place and be closer so they can watch you, basically, that Harry is, you know, disagreeing with, takes Yana hostage.
Yeah, what's her name?
Todd? Yeah, I don't think they ever like get into the personal, you know, but that is her name.
You know how because there's another thing, you know how we keep like, Tellum even mentions it to Harry and Raish, the vision of Raish on the ship.
Right.
A few episodes ago also mentions how it's not the first time this has happened, that he's like lost somebody.
Yeah.
That's not this, right? They're not talking about when he, spoiler alert, I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but when he exacts his own revenge on Dr. Todd. That's not what they're talking about.
The impression I was given was that he like somehow fucked up and like abandoned his child. I've abandoned my boy. Like,
right.
I thought there was some, like he had done something that led to his child's death because they've been referring to him losing a child.
Right.
Since season one.
And is this whole story what they're referring to? Like his kind of like stubbornness, not taking the job quick enough at Streeling, like all that.
I guess,
like,
but it didn't seem like his fault. Like, I would be suspicious too.
I was expecting something way more like...
like a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
There are...
I think as of now, we have to assume yes, but I don't really know.
I'm not totally sure either. This was a nice little pair of episodes to watch together, by the way, just because it felt like they kept referencing each other and there were a lot of parallels and like a lot of things that were kind of telling the same story as either a thread that we already had been given, you know, kind of earlier in the season, or kind of is happening simultaneously. But like, you know, obviously like this idea of abandonment, and then of guilt, and then of somebody hunting for the Prime Radiant.
Yep.
And then there were a few other of these. I kind of picked up on all of them halfway through episode 7 and I hadn't written any of it down. And so I wish I had taken notes on these two episodes, but, cause a lot is starting to happen and kind of come together. Just a random diatribe.
No, the season
I'll come back to.
The season before, like the first 5 episodes, you never really got a grip on like, okay, this is clearly the direction mm-hmm. we're going. And 6 and 7, these two episodes, really things start moving quickly.
I thought so. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Dr. T-A-D-J, Todd,
okay,
is the one that tells Harry he's got to, you know, hand over the Prime Radiant. But he fakes her out with a rock,
right?
Which, you know, just unwrap the thing real quick and check it, lady. But he takes Dr. Todd out to the middle of some desert, which is like the exact place he danced with these moon shrieks as a child. And he pushes Dr. Todd into a stampede of these moon dragons because it turns out Harry knows his wife and unborn child are already dead. When she shows, you know, that hologram of her or whatever and says, like, look, she's perfectly safe. Like, he doesn't buy any of that. And it turns out it's because he's got this necklace with this device on it, pendant, that tracks the heartbeat of both Yana and the unborn child, mm-hmm. which faded away at some point during this web weaving of lies.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he kills that lady cold-blooded. Great at dancing between a stampede. Really,
yeah,
really good.
Yeah, some might even say that he does a little dance with dragons.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Some might say that. Some might also say that Mufasa could have benefited by having some of Harry's skill set because he wasn't as good.
In pattern reading.
Yep.
Yeah.
Got to be better. Got to be better, Mufasa. So we see Harry on Trantor in Streeling University's library, where obviously he has like accepted Yana's plan to bring down Empire from the inside after all, because she was like trying to talk him into that. Like, they're trying to hurt us, let's hurt them. And he was I don't know.
Nowhere better to be than close to the rib when you want to insert the knife.
Slide in the knife.
Slide in the knife. Yeah, exactly.
Back in the present, Harry, still drowning, passes out, does not appear. He will be saved. And that's how the episode ends. We're not done discussing the episode, but that is how the episode ends. We see Harry, you know, drowning there in the water. To jump over to Trantor, Brother Constant and Polly arrive and explain the purpose of their journey to the customs check-in people.
Yep.
And, you know, they want to open diplomatic channels and try to create some peace here between the Outer Reach and Trantor. They are given a provisional visa, and then that night, drunk Polly, not sure where the booze came from.
Well, they're walking through. They get their visas and Constance's like, should we go check into the hotel now?
Yeah.
And he's like, nah, we gotta go get toasted because we're on the company dime, basically.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah.
They go hit a you gotta think that they hit a little Trantor speakeasy or two before hitting their hotel, which is small, but it's a nice accommodation. And the nuts are very expensive, as we all know from visiting the hotel minibar.
Yeah.
But hey, the view, that's gratis, baby.
It is. And it's a hell of a view. but as drunk Polly decides, like, you know what? Enough of the drugs.
I'm getting clean.
I'm gonna clean up. And he lets Constant flush his drugs down the sink. And they're like talking about faith. And he's really ashamed that, like, for him, it's extremely easy to believe in Harry because he literally saw him with his own two eyes.
Yeah, and he's
for her, it's all faith.
Drawing the distinction between belief and faith.
Yeah.
And it's easy when you've seen something with your own eyes, but for somebody like Constant, who is only hearing second and third hand accounts of it, to have that type of faith is making him feel shame.
Yes. It also draws the comparison of, like, it brings up, even though he saw Harry, he still has doubt, I think, was a part of the point. Like, it's shameful, not that he believes because he saw, but that he still doubts
that he's right.
Even when he saw.
Sure.
I think is what that is meant to convey. But yeah, they get arrested. Brother Day does this big announcement about his engagement to Queen Sereth to this huge crowd of people, which I kind of assume were all government-related. You know, I don't think it's just a bunch of citizens that showed up to, like, Or you know, whatever. I don't know.
I got
the feeling it was kind of like in Star Wars when they have these big announcements with all the different diplomats from around the galaxy or whatever.
I think it was more the people of Trantor, actually.
Yeah.
Because they talk about...
Oh, that's true.
He talks about how it was like, you know, the former pit of the gladiators and, like, this is where they washed the blood out into the ravines that were, you know, all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
One thing I just wanted to toss in here is how it's interesting how a lot of these kind of like future sci-fi shows depict a world or a planet or a pocket of power that is obviously like super, super duper Blade Runner-y high tech, right? But then there's always some like also very kind of old world king and queen look in the Colosseum type thing. You know what I mean?
No, definitely.
It's like that's a very common trope in the sci-fi stuff, and it's just interesting because, like, okay, well, it makes sense for storytelling, but honestly, I don't think that's how it would go in real life as we progress thousands and thousands of years in the future. I feel like any of that, people would just be sitting on their poop sofas like an Idiocracy, just watching from a phone that's probably like 14 inches big at that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's weird. It's almost like
it'll all be super digital. There won't. I think it's just weird how we like to have like the big in-person stadium type things while also the ultra high tech.
Yeah, symbolic in some ways, I think. That's almost why I kind of assumed, like, well, this must be a bunch of government people, right? Because there's no way they just packed citizens in here. But in hindsight, I think it's a combination of both, too. Like, I got the impression that this was broadcast, probably.
Yeah.
In some way, shape, or form.
I probably so. And we've seen, like, some little broadcasting type units before. So you're right. It could have been some type of elite there. But also, Trantor, they've said it before, but Trantor has like a trillion people on it or something, I think.
Yeah, crazy numbers.
Like an insane number of people, so.
And they lost, like, it was like 250 million or whatever died in that one attack alone.
Massive, massive, massive number.
It's a big place.
Yeah.
So he's announcing, you know, the engagement to Queen Sereth. He unveils a statue of Winneset, the mother of Cleon the First, who was apparently overlooked to some degree. Not anymore, though, Barrett. And introduces Queen Sereth, announces her as the new empress, and says point blank, if you haven't picked up on what I'm laying down, I'm ending the genetic dynasty. This is it. It's over. And then Queen Sereth surprises him by giving her own speech to the people, saying all the things that Empire would never say, which is like, we are here for you, we are here to serve you, we love you, this is all about you. And obviously he is not all too pleased with her going rogue and doing that. But, you know, nothing terribly explosive happens as a result. Hober Mallow, otherwise known as Hober Marshmallow, continues his solo mission, goes and finds the spacers, but when he shows up, there's nothing there. Like, he's like, oh, what's happening? I'm at the right coordinates. I don't see anything. And then their giant invisible spaceship appears, and he's taken on board.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And Harry, once again, used fancy math to predict the model of where exactly that spacer ship would be. Once again, blurring the line between just how much Harry can predict and you know, because it feels like he's constantly saying that psycho history is like very much like a very broad predictive model. It can say the big things,
but not individuals.
But it can like predict where the spaceship's going to be. I don't know.
And also that they needed Hober Marshmallow in the first place. Like, he's very much an individual person.
Yeah. So right. So it's, you know, how deep does it all go? I guess it doesn't totally matter. It does a little bit of both. But yeah, he does. They're surprised to be, to be found by this tiny little Hober Marshmallow and his whisper ship.
Yes, very surprised.
The swarm, as it were.
Yeah.
What? So are the spacers? I thought that even earlier in this episode, when Constant has the conversation with one of them on the trip to Trantor.
Yes.
She mentions it's like it's amazing what they can do with human genetic coding or something like that.
Yeah.
So the spacers, they're not born like that. Are they?
Well, when you first see that one that she's talking to, which is basically like her, what do they call the people on airplanes who help you out?
A flight attendant?
It's like a flight attendant. Yeah. Gets her all, set up, takes her out of cryo sleep or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, that's an alien. Looks like almost an avatar type person, right?
We've seen the spacers throughout. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is maybe the first time where you get a little like, well, we're human.
Right.
Yeah.
And then she says something to the extent of she's so amazed what they can do with genetic,
manipulation or coding or something like that.
Which does make it seem like they are created a very specific way.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we learn more about that in the future. I don't know. But there's definitely something going on there with the spacers.
Something going on. And I think at the very least, what we can assume is that this giant ship and the swarm, the mothership, this is the one place where spacers are made and created and birthed and all of that.
Right.
And they obviously have a tenuous relationship, or a fragile one, I should say, with Empire, given that they are required to give 10% of their offspring to the Empire to run jump ships and to run the spacer activities, and then also because of their genetic manipulations or the way that they are created, they need obelisk?
Something like that. I have it in my notes for the next episode.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, they're basically being held hostage to
a
certain extent.
A little bit.
Yeah, it's a toxic relationship.
They don't really have freedom.
Right.
Do we get it's episode 6 where we get the whole conversation in here?
I think it's episode 7 where they get into that whole thing.
Got it.
Yeah, the episode 6 kind of ends with it ends with Harry drowning, but the part with Hober and the spacers ends with them both being like, "Well, this is shocking." And then you don't get into their conversation until episode 7.
I'll save it.
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and jump over there. But first, this bustling holiday season, you might be looking for nutritious, convenient meals to keep you energized on jam-packed days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service, can help you fuel up fast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle while tackling all of your holiday to-dos. Today's episode is brought to you by Factor. With 2 kids under 5 at home and a business to run and a total lack of cooking skills, I've been relying on and loving Factor meals for months. But now, during the insanity of the holiday season, I am more thankful for Factor than ever. Cross meal prepping off your list this holiday season with Factor. Skip the meal planning, grocery shopping, chopping, prepping, and cleaning up, and get Factor's fresh, never frozen meals delivered straight to your door. They're ready in just 2 minutes, so all you have to do is heat and enjoy. If you're looking for calorie conscious options over the holidays that don't skimp on flavor, try delicious dietitian approved calorie smart meals with around or less than 550 calories per serving. Or need an extra boost to support your wellness goals and feel your best during the holidays? Try protein plus meals with 30 grams of protein or more per serving. With Factor, you can also rest assured you're making a sustainable choice. They offset 100% of their delivery emissions, source 100% renewable electricity for their production sites and offices, and feature sustainably sourced seafood in their meals. This December, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/OCC50 and use code OCC50 to get 50% off. That's code OCC50 at factormeals.com/OCC50 to get 50% off. Let's start episode 7 of season 2, which is called A Necessary Death, with Brother Constant and Polly Verisov, who find themselves imprisoned in the Imperial Palace. Brother Day and Demerzel observe them from a distance and are informed that the clerics are from the Church of Harry Seldon. And Demerzel asks Day if he wants to postpone this whole wedding thing. She seems to be worried that the marriage will get in the way of what they've got cooking. With their little secret romance.
Yeah, that's also, but I feel like she's using that a little bit, and I think that really this is kind of, for me, it's kind of calling back to when she kills Day kind of on her own accord.
Yeah.
And that she will do whatever is best for the Empire. A line that she reiterates to Queen Sereth. And, you know, again, this is, we've talked about this a little bit before, but Empire is Empire, but also the Empire is the Empire.
Right.
So what exactly does she mean there?
Yeah. Hard to tell.
Look, she's obviously getting more menacing the further this season.
Yeah, that's very true.
continues, and I don't think she likes this marriage one bit. I'm going to keep, that's the drum that I'm beating on this podcast, is that people are not liking things one bit. And Demerzel, that's what she is not liking. I don't think she's a fan of this. I think that she believes in the genetic continuation, the cloning and whatnot, and I don't know that she's going to full on dead this, but I wouldn't be surprised if that is something that comes into play.
The impression I leave episode 7 with is that she doesn't want things to change, because the way things are with the genetic dynasty works in her favor.
It does.
Nobody new is brought into the picture to question her part in all of this.
And she seems to have a lot of control, more control than even the Cleons realize, given that she might be erasing some of their memories.
Yes. And it turns out Queen Sereth is actually aware of Demerzel and Brother Day's sexual arrangement, as I will call it. Queen Sereth still wants to find out if Brother Day killed her family, and her bestie consigliere Rue urges her, like, don't push, don't embarrass the Emperor. That whole speech thing you did was not the safest play. You might get killed.
The one thing you can't do is embarrass him publicly,
which she just did, to some extent. So Queen Sereth is summoned for an examination of her reproductive parts. It's all very cold and weird, and there's like a gathering, a mask. Like, it, this speaks back to what you were saying. It's this combination of like insane futuristic technology and very old school, like weird, almost medieval style shit where they're like, all right, well, we have to check you out to make sure you can birth an heir, but also there's going to be 20 freaking people in the room. Like, you know what I mean? So on the way there, Demerzel is walking her over to the examination room or whatever, and Queen Sarah tells Demerzel that she knows she's a robot, that she knows about her inhumanity. She's kind of, you know, laying her cards out on the table here between telling her, hey, I know you're not a human, and then also in that room in front of all those people, she ends up saying, like, don't worry, Demerzel, I won't screw with you and the Emperor's arrangement.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely pushing the envelope, and I think also kind of simultaneously letting Demerzel that she has ways of getting information as well, right?
Yeah, she's much better informed than anyone would have thought, I think.
Yeah, yeah, but certainly flying close to the sun with all of this.
Yeah, it seems like
all
it.
All this chatter.
A little quickly, she's playing all these cards. But Brother Day wants to harvest her eggs to begin the process of producing an heir, and Queen Sarah refuses to go ahead with the procedure until they are officially married. So, like, she's down, but after the wedding, not yet. Demerzel ends up staying behind in that examination room with her and explaining to Queen Sarah, or basically heavily implying, oh, it was me who killed your whole family. Like, she comments, like, oh, that was done in the exact way that I do things around here. You know, saying it without saying it.
Yes, yes, yes. That's the type of precision with which I do my work.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's a great cold line.
Yeah, and essentially telling her that she killed her entire family.
Yeah. So that upsets Queen Sarah greatly. And
she does also say, does she say something, does she use the word indirectly in that line about potentially about Brother Day?
Maybe.
Because she, right, because then Sarah spits that one back out where she's like, she says that some, she says such, so-and-so, and I know I didn't have anything to do with it, indirectly. And it's kind of like what triggers Day to know that she's essentially like accusing him of the murder again, when they're sitting in a little, his little scary, scary garden.
Yeah,
and I couldn't remember when she said that. I was like, okay, did Demerzel say something like that too? But anyway,
There's a lot of suspicion going on at this point, though, and some things being confirmed indirectly. Yeah, but Queen Sarah meets with Brother Dawn in secret using these facial scramblers, which are, again, like it's just gets confusing when you like on Ignis. You don't know who's who.
Right.
Anybody could appear to be anybody. And then over here, we got facial scramblers.
Yeah, yeah.
Anybody can appear to be anybody. But Queen Sarah and Brother Dawn have a little sexy secret friendship cooking here.
Yeah, bloodless coup that's in the works.
A bloodless coup. That was a good line, too. Yeah. Don't want anybody to know they're meeting. And Queen Sarah tells Dawn that she's a prisoner.
Yeah.
And she's going to have to marry Day. There's no way around that. But she wants Brother Dawn to be the father of the heir to the throne instead of Brother Day.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she's been slow playing this cat for a few episodes here.
Now, I don't know exactly how she intends to get this done.
No, it seems like it would be very complicated, but she did ask that question in the examination room when they pull that ball out of her, and she's like, ow, I hope that this hurts equally for Brother Day when you have to reverse his sterilization or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, it takes about 15 seconds using this little machine right here.
Well, right.
And she like looks over at her guy like, that's the little machine.
Yeah. So they get that machine and then she gives that to brother, to Dawn.
Yeah.
So like,
go ahead and use this on your dinghy.
He can remove his nanobots so that he is no longer sterile.
Right.
But then like, she's going to have to bone both of them. Right.
I don't even get the impression that Day wants to bone. He just wants to inject.
That's true. He does. They talk about that they're not gonna conceive the old fashioned way, are they?
Right.
So she would. Okay, so maybe she would start sleeping with Dawn, and
right before they inject her or something, and just hope.
Try to get pregnant, and then when they go to inject, they're like, "There's already a." Zygotes.
I have no idea.
And then we get into all of the
the specifics of
childbirth and fertilization.
Yeah.
And then she's just like, oh, must have happened when we consummated the marriage, even though they haven't ever done that, maybe? Like, is that...
I'm not exactly sure how she plans on pulling this off. I'm assuming that she would have to time it really, really well.
That's all I'm saying, is that the timing of all of it
seems to be
difficult to pull off. Now, you've obviously seen the last few episodes, so you don't have to say anything further. But that's all I was thinking about. Now, I will say, thinking about the Spacers, who we'll get to in a second, they reject Tober Marshmallow's offer and immediately turn him into the Empire.
Right, it's a bummer.
It's Dawn is not just immediately turning around to Day and Dusk and being like, yo, this bitch is trying to start a coup.
Exactly.
she wants my seed.
He seems to be into it.
I think that he's kind of in right now, I would say. And you got to think that for these Kleon clones, this all the talk about their legacy being cut out from under them is effective.
Yeah, the old one, Brother
Dusk,
even says to Dawn at the announcement of Queen Sarith, the public one, he's like, well, at least we ate good while the cooking was ready, or whatever that fucking line is that he has.
Well, and Dusk, I mean, this guy's like days away from going and burning himself into ashes anyway, so.
Way less impacted than Dawn, who's going to have to live the rest of his life.
Yeah, he got his moment.
Yeah, yeah. Back to Hober Marshmallow and the Spacers. He negotiates with them. Like you said, he offers them Opalesk. That's what it's called. So I think that's what you said.
Yeah.
So, you were close, if not
exactly
correct.
I think
exactly
I said it
correct.
With a B, Obelisk.
Oh, yeah.
But that's actually I think an Obelisk is like a shape, like of a statue.
Well, I don't know.
But
this
Obelisk.
Is Obelisk.
Obelisk. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
It's a micronutrient that the Spacers depend on. And like we said earlier, Empire takes 10% of the Spacers' offspring in return for this micronutrient. So that's the exchange. They've got all of the Obelisk. The only way the Spacers can survive and do their thing is with Obelisk. And so they say, all right, you give us 10% of your offspring to run our jumpy ships, and we'll keep you flush with the amount of Opalesque you need. So they can't really break that agreement without completely screwing themselves over is the point here.
Right. And Opalesque, as the main mother spacer says, right, she's like, nobody can synthesize this. You can't just do this.
Right.
But that's technology that the Foundation has created.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Which that's, Hober points out to them, like, you're going to be obsolete soon. We've got this futuristic technology that Empire will inevitably get a hold of or create on their own. And then what will become of your arrangement, basically. That's like his play, right? Like, this is the reason you should do this for us. But the lead spacer, she is center, somehow mentally communicates with her daughter. Mm-hmm. She bends Light, who is on Bel Rios' ship. And they determine that betraying Empire would actually be worse than for their people.
Too dangerous, too risky.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I will say, turning in Hober Marshmallow and allowing him to, and introducing the very technology that will certainly make them obsolete, also seems risky to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess they didn't really have a safe move one way or the other.
No, they sure didn't.
But this doesn't seem to have
hoping
worked out too well.
Hoping to be rewarded for their loyalty, I expect, but that typically doesn't go super, super well under authoritarian and dictatorial rule.
It does not.
Yeah.
They turn Hober Marshmallow in and his whisper ship over to Bel Rios. Hober tries to escape, but he kind of loses the fight with Bel and his husband Glaywin. And then he's like, oh shit, I'll just release the ship's shriek. Becky. So Becky attacks Bel Rios and Glaywin, allowing Hober to escape. And that was a cool scene.
I thoroughly enjoyed this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like Becky
getting out there, getting nasty with it.
Yep.
Saving old Hober.
Yeah. He keeps getting out of tight spots, this Hober fella.
He sure does. He's pretty good at that, I'd
he
say.
He is.
You know? He's a sly, cunning fellow.
Mm-hmm. Smooth criminal. Brother Day is informed of Hober's escape and of the futuristic technology that they, like you just said, it doesn't stay secret very long.
No.
Oh, shit, they don't even need spacers. So Brother Day gets even more paranoid about the Foundation's potential advantages in this whole war thing. So he's like, all right, let's go talk to these clerics that we've got imprisoned and see what their intentions are. He brings them into the throne room. Brother Constant and Polly, again, explain their mission. They want to form an alliance with Empire. They want to avoid any bloodshed. And Brother Day is like, well, yeah, that's all good and well, except that I know about Hober Marshmallow and his little plan, and it backfired. The Spacers don't want an alliance, so what do you have to say for yourselves now? And so Harry Seldon appears like the Tupac hologram at fucking, what was that? The rat behind me just fell off the wall. Like the Tupac hologram at Coachella.
Not a real rat.
No, it was a toy of the rat from Muppet Christmas Carol. It's neither here nor there. Anyway, suddenly we've got Harry Seldon back in the throne room talking to Brothers Day, Dusk, and Dawn.
He's implanted a piece of himself into Brother Constant.
Yes.
And he makes himself known here and now.
Did you hear the Demerzel line where she's like, well, we did notice duplicate brain scans when she was coming through the old... Like, she was basically like, it did seem like there was two people in one, but we didn't think anything of it.
Oh, so I thought she was saying, we did the brain scans and there was nothing noteworthy.
Oh, maybe. I don't... Well, one of the two.
Okay.
one of either what I just said or you
just
said.
I thought she was like, holy shit, how did this happen? Because we didn't see anything when we did all the brain scans. But you might be right. Maybe you're right.
Yeah, either way, Harry's in there talking. And it's cool the way they shot this, though, where like when you're looking from Empire's view, you see Harry Seldon straight up, and then they show you from behind. Like, it's very much still Brother Constant talking, but Empire is seeing and hearing Harry Seldon. Harry tells Day that he is, like, I'm physically alive and well on Terminus, and Foundation has the weaponry and the technology for war that we know we would win, but we prefer to broker a peace arrangement with you here. And Day throws back at him, like, well, your predictions and your math are now outdated because I have taken on a queen and we're going to make real offspring with... injections, and we're going to break the genetic dynasty, and it's going to screw up all of your predictions.
Yeah.
And to that, what happens? Day orders Bel Rios to head to Terminus for war and to retrieve Harry's technology, and sends further ships with him too. They're like, unleash the fleet of whatever the fuck. I guess it's no longer just like a search and find information mission for Bel Rios. Now they're saying like, all right, this is full-blown war.
Yeah, they're going to surround Terminus, plunder it, it seems like, for its tech and all that, and then probably lay waste to it.
Probably blow it up.
Is what I would imagine, yeah. Yeah, that seems to be the MO for old Cleon.
Yeah, so they shock the shit out of Brother Day with some kind of electricity
Brother
attack
Constant.
Here. Brother Constant, excuse me, yes, thank you. And re-imprison the two clerics.
And there's the dig there about how they don't take too kindly to Thespians offering gifts on Trantor.
Right.
A nod to the origin of this whole shebang, really.
That attack.
Yeah. And so it's not looking good for Brother Constant and Brother Polly.
No, it is not.
Among many of our characters.
No, yeah. A lot of people in a bad spot.
Who it's not looking great for.
They are potentially in the worst spot of everybody. Because you feel like, how are they going to get out of this? Like, how the hell are they going to get out of there?
Well, I mean, you got to think Hober Marshmallow is going to come rescue them.
Ah, with Becky.
With old Becky.
Becky. Over on Ignis, to close out episode 7, Salvor grows very suspicious of these mentalics. She's like, something is not... adding up here, no pun intended, and Gale has already fallen under their spell, though, and she's, like, pressuring Salvor to just go along with it, follow suit, don't fight this, like, we're in a good spot here. Gale is giving Salvor the impression that she does not see anything off, that she's, like, she's on board with this plan that Tellum has laid out for her. And Salvor ends up going and checking up one of these metallic boats.
Yeah, the one that I think Tellum was on.
And she's like, wait a minute, there's no data here. I guess the boats record where they go and what they do each day, and this boat's data has been erased.
They deleted the logs.
Right.
You know?
That were in the boat.
Because the files were in the computer.
In the boat. Yeah.
But it couldn't erase the whole, you know, the whole back set. I don't know, I'm just making up words now.
Well, she ends up getting in the boat and like leading it, following its last known route.
Right. Yeah.
And she goes to the place where Harry was murdered.
Pull at the sweater. The whole thing might unravel.
she swims over. She swims over to Harry's lifeless body and like, oh my God, fuck, what happened here? He's fucking dead. And then Tellum and her guards pop up like, we've been waiting for you. And they call Harry's death a necessity. That's the whole necessary death in the title of the episode. And then they knock Salvor out, and she looks like she's starting to drown there besides Harry's corpse when this episode closes.
Yeah, she's face down, floating in water, which is generally not great for living.
It's not good for breathing. You got to breathe.
Not good for breathing, and there is currently nobody in sight to save her. You know, now this was a crazy ending. This was a great cliffhanger to leave on. Good for podcasting, I would say. You know, that this is where we left ourselves. And
two of our main characters floating dead in the water.
Two of our main characters basically floating dead in the water. One of whom seems for sure dead, since he has theoretically been there for hours.
Yeah.
Harry with a body we hardly knew ye.
Seriously though.
So that's a bit of a shock. Obviously, with Harry in the vault and Harry flashbacks and all that, we're not done with Jared Harris or the Selden character. But I'm very interested to see if they try to pull him out of the water, literally. You know, to recapture his body if he's somehow able to be saved or resurrected. There are a bunch of people who can literally, quote unquote, do magic on this planet. So
right.
It's not out of the question, but they certainly leave you in a spot that feels more definitive than Kendall floating in the water
of that the pool
of that episode of Succession, right? Like this definitely seemed like even more precarious than that.
Well, I don't worry too much about Harry because of what you just said. Like, it seems like they've got like his metadata; they can just stick him in another body or whatever.
James Harden, Warden Selden.
Her, I'm worried about.
Very worried about that.
Tough spot there.
And she's been, she has been pulling on this thread. She's been feeling shaky about this whole thing. By the way, I don't know if you clocked any of this, but I'm getting big Matrix vibes here on Ignis.
Oh yeah,
there's like a lot of like Neo-ish Chosen One type stuff, and then even just some of the things and the vibe and the way that some things are kind of happening. It's not the same actor that played the Oracle in the Matrix, but her voice kind of sounds the same.
They have the same vibe,
vibe. They have a very similar vibe. I keep getting things watching this show. I'm like, oh, this feels kind of like this. This is referencing this or feels a lot like this. And this episode I was getting just big Matrix vibes.
The part where Tellum starts like really trying to get under Gale's skin,
mm-hmm.
and Gale does like she like reacts and like pushes Tellum with her mind across the room.
Yep.
I was like, getting major The Force in Star Wars vibes, but then definitely there was some Matrix stuff in there too with regard to like being the one.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot going on in these two episodes. Yeah, it was pretty chaotic.
And Gale, Tellum is behind Gale doing this, but Gale, when they start, you know, one of the young Mentalics asks her who the mule is because she keeps thinking about it because all these people are just in each other's minds all day long.
Yeah.
And she, she says, oh, well, the mule's going to come in 125 years. He's going to try to kill Saul. And she basically stands up and gives her rousing, like, I'm the new leader speech about how we have to band together. And if we do that, and if we like expand our minds and go save more Mentalics and like bring everything together here, then we'll be ready to defend ourselves from the mule. And basically she is doing foundation number two here.
Right.
So, like, up until this point, like, Tellum is letting her do Foundation 2, just no Harry Selden involved, and kind of, like, her being the new figurehead. And then, you know, that kind of, like, translates back to or recalls the conversation that Harry has with Salvor over one of these two episodes about how there is only one Prime Radiant, but because of, like, the quantum nature of it, it can exist in two places at one time. And that that whole conversation about how Vault Terminus Harry couldn't know about Second Harry and couldn't know about Second Foundation.
Right.
Anyway, there's so much happening in these two episodes to push the story forward and to kind of obviously create a whole bunch more questions. But like, we're also kind of setting up this, you know, Harry doesn't believe in you, Gale. You're always going to be his subordinate. You're never going to be his equal, even though you're his better.
Yeah.
All that type of stuff. And now I'm wondering if like Foundation is versus Foundation 2 will actually be like a
full-blown conflict,
a battle or a conflict rather than one kind of almost like supporting the other in the shadows as it was kind of pitched out by Harry.
Yeah.
That could easily be one of our many crises on the red line of
right.
the prime.
Well, we had plenty to pick from, yeah.
Of the prime radiant. But yeah, if Harry is truly gone from this place because he's dead now again, and Gale is going to lead Foundation number 2 under her own kind of rule, that you know, and then we've got the competing Gale versus Harry methodologies. They're sects of the same religion, basically.
Right.
Like, you know, this could
it's gonna get weird.
Could spin out into a bunch of very, very interesting ways. And yeah, I don't know what that means for Salvor, old Salvor, who might not even be with us in the future episodes. And even though I think she will be, if I had to place a bet, I will just say, I thought these were a couple of her best episodes.
Right.
You know, I know people, some of our listeners and callers, especially on the Patreon episodes, have her performance has kind of rubbed people the wrong way. But I thought her conversation with Harry especially was really strong, and I thought she was getting more and better stuff to do as kind of like the sus detective.
Yes.
In this little arc here.
Yeah, she's kind of been carrying that vibe since we met her, and mm-hmm. it's like didn't really fit yet. So now that there's actually a position where it's like,
right.
oh, somebody needs to go and figure out what the hell is happening on this freaking weirdo yep. psychic island, now she makes more sense, and unfortunately she might also be drowned to death by the time that episode ends. But another thing that all your points just made me recall, when we meet Tellum, like first she presents as this little girl, right? And then she's like, "Ah, oh, it's you caught me. That thing didn't have a shadow. It's really me who's the leader/mentalic god here." That whole scene in episode ends with her saying, "There isn't gonna be a second foundation."
Right.
Remember?
Right.
So she like sets yes. the ominous vibes out. And then in this batch of two episodes, she's handing over
handing
this whole
over
situation
to, yeah. yep.
to Gale, being yep. like, "I'm dying. You're going to be the new leader of the Mentalics. You
yep.
can do your Foundation number 2. I'll train you up, but
yep.
you have to agree to like take this place
right.
over for me." So either yep. she's had a change of heart or
it's all a ruse.
Or it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
One way or the other, you got to think we find out before the end of the season.
And we do know that I'm pretty sure she still wants that Prime Radiant. So
yeah, does seem so. Which does not bode well.
No. And we also know that, you know, she's admitted and acknowledged as much that she is beyond the normal amount of being scared of death.
Right.
And the Prime Radiant seems to have some properties that can sort of allow you a level of immortality.
Yeah. Well, as we've seen, yeah, with Harry, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. So that yeah, it there's a lot going on here on Ignis.
Today's episode is also brought to you by Athletic Greens. As we go hurtling towards 2024, like many of you, I'm trying to make sure I am feeling my best and living my best life. That's where Athletic Greens comes in. Why take a bunch of different things when you can just mix one scoop of powder in water once a day? Their flagship product, AG1, was designed with ease in mind so you can live healthier and better without having to do too much. It's the healthiest thing you can do in under a minute. AG1 has been part of millions of mornings since 2010. In my time using it, I noticed an increase in energy, mood support, and better overall digestion as well. The goal of Athletic Greens is to make it easier for you to live your best life. If you want better gut health, immune system support, hate taking a bunch of different pills and vitamins, and want something that tastes great, AG1 has you covered. If you're looking for an easier way to take supplements, Athletic Greens is giving you a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/dragon. That's athleticgreens.com/dragon to support our show and your body at the same time. Go now, athleticgreens.com/dragon. So through 7 episodes, Barrett.
Yes.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling really good. We have talked about how this season introduced some new kind of elements that were a little more fantastical. What did I call it the other day? A whimsical.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting quirkier characters, I would say, with
definitely.
The likes of Hober Marshmallow and Brother Constant. And so we just kind of introduced some stuff that was different than the very self-serious, mathematical, cerebral nature of season one, which leaned heavily into that and not much else.
Right.
Which some people did not like very much. Critics, stuff you read online. I personally hit for me really well. So I think, you know, when we left our conversation a couple weeks ago, we were kind of getting used to that. And I think you said that, like, this first half of the season kind of sets you up with some of that stuff and then uses it to execute what it wants to do pretty well in the second half. And I thought these two episodes were great signs of that. I liked both of these episodes a lot. The story, I liked the flashback to Harry and kind of his, a little bit more of his, not necessarily origin story, but how he got to where he was, how he lost who he lost.
Kind of his origin story, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. And then everything that's happening on Ignis is really interesting. And I think the kind of the Gale Salvor thing is beginning to, you know, show dividends basically. And obviously, like, you know, with Harry drowned basically at the moment and Salvor face down, it left us in a really interesting place that makes you want to watch the next episode. So yeah, I'm digging it. I'm feeling very, very strong, very, very bullish about the season at this point, because there are three episodes left and a lot happening. And obviously this show expects to continue for several more seasons. So I don't expect all of it to wrap up by the end of season two, but I'm sure that we'll put a button on a few things at the very least, all of which would be, you know, very, very interesting. And I mean, this was probably, I feel like we've done we've had plenty of time to cover the element, the plot lines of two episodes at a time. We could probably do another hour on these two.
Yeah, this was a tough stretch.
This was a tough stretch.
For fitting into a 1 hour podcast.
Into a 1 hour podcast. Cause like, we didn't even touch on like Bel Rios and Glaewyn's little conversation about,
yeah,
you know, about how, like, basically kind of Glaewyn pitching out the idea of aligning with the Foundation instead of the Empire, and then Bel Rios explaining why that's the worst idea ever, basically.
Yeah.
Even though the very fact that it was brought up but poses it as a possibility going forward.
Yeah, I mean, Glaewyn has very much been like the, hey, let's go, the Empire sucks, let's go be part of the Rebels, right. And Bel Rios is like, here's why we can't do your plan.
But they're in their bedroom reading their band's little books and that type of thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's that going on. The introduction of the Swarm and the Spacers is really cool. I'm very interested to learn more about that. And then I even think that they did, like the stuff, Hober Marshmallow's little escape with Becky was the kind of fun stuff that you can do with a character like that, you know,
with an adventure, smooth criminal guy.
Yeah.
With a Han Solo.
And when you pair it with you're now getting like cool sci-fi spacer element there, hardened generals in Bel Rios and Glaewyn representing the Empire there. And like, those three things colliding with Hober feel kind of tight. Whereas like doing funny Hober with a guy that keeps saying Titan's prick and on a world that doesn't matter with like a bunch of like con artist stuff going on
wasn't
like,
quite the same, right?
And also Brother Constant and Brother Polly doing their little shtick.
Right.
That was all like, what the hell is happening?
No, it's like you were saying. I mean, they've got a lot of irons in the fire. They built over the first five episodes. The vibe change from season one to two takes a little bit of getting used to before you see it start to pay dividends in these later episodes. And for the reason you're saying, where the stuff that you saw as a little bit silly and maybe just forced early in the season is now starting to hit really well
now
for these characters.
Better. Yeah, yeah. When you kind of bring that all back into the Empire fold, really,
right.
Which is not surprising given that I feel like, you and I have thought that that was kind of the strongest overall storyline throughout, at least the most consistent.
Definitely. And I mean, it's in part because I think, well, they've created things that weren't in the books for the Empire storyline as well, but I think it has been more challenging for the writers of Foundation in the writer's room for this TV show to figure out how to make the non-Empire stuff really grabby and interesting and exciting, right? And the Empire stuff was just a little easier. It's like, there's three of these guys. They're clones. That's fascinating already. Then you got a fucking, they've got a consigliere robot who we don't know what her intentions really are. Like, there's a lot of shit to that's interesting over there kind of automatically. But all that being said, it shapes out really well here through episodes six and seven. And I'm looking forward to discussing episodes 8 and 9 with y'all next week. So we will do two more. And then remember, the finale, episode 10, will have its own podcast where we'll kind of get through everything that happens there, discuss it, and then discuss the season on the whole. So next week, we'll cover episodes 8 and the penultimate episode 9. And then the following week, the episode 10 season 2 finale. I would note, after we get through with Foundation season 2, obviously there will not be any more Foundation to discuss. So we will be moving on to other stuff. And one of the things that I can guarantee you we move on to is Fargo season 5. Which dropped the first two episodes on November 21st, so those are available now. I have not watched them yet, but I am hearing great things. Tons of positive buzz around this season of Fargo.
Okay.
So for those of you who are looking for other stuff to watch, like if you want to go ahead and dive into the first episodes of Fargo, like do that. I probably will, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how exactly we will plan out our coverage of that show. It may just be that we do a couple of episodes discussing like the first half of the season and the second half or something like that. But we will be talking Fargo season 5 after we finish up with Foundation in a few weeks. And
I think we can pretty much also guarantee that we'll be back to week by week for True Detective, Night Country, which starts January 14th.
Yeah, so I'll just mention this quickly. I've talked about it on Patreon, but I've finished my True Detective season 1 rewatch because it happened by accident, sort of. It was just so fucking good, I couldn't stop. It was amazing. It hit me way different at 36 years old and was fantastic. I just cannot say enough about how good of a season of TV that is. And then my wife never watched season 2. So I was like, I've been telling her, like, it's one of the worst fucking things ever made. And she was like, I kind of have to see it now. I haven't made it more than 20 minutes into an episode. We've watched, like, 5 of them already. I haven't made it more than 20 minutes in without passing out cold. And I've caught some of the really, really bad lines. Like, one of the Vince Vaughn lines in episode 1 is he says, never do anything out of hunger, not even eating. And that line, when I first heard it, which was, 8 years ago was just so fucking bad. But watching it a little stoned at 36, I was like, all right, I kind of get it a little bit. But then as the show progresses, like episode 2, 3, it just keeps getting worse. Yeah. And really the only thing you're looking forward to is a Colin Farrell cocaine and booze fueled meltdown, which happen every couple episodes. But it is just, it's awful. So I'm really looking forward to season 4 where Nick Pizzolatto will not be involved at all, because as I said on Patreon, I think he kind of busted his nut all on season 1. He blew his load.
Yeah.
That was all he had. And he said everything he could say in a way that was fantastic, but then when he moved on to season 2, he just didn't have his fastball anymore, and season 3 was okay. But anyway, point being, we'll finish up Foundation in the next couple weeks. We'll do 8 and 9 next week. We'll do episode 10 the week after that, and then we'll move into Fargo season 5, and then in January we've got True Detective season 4, and there's a lot of great stuff on the horizon. We're very excited to be here with y'all. Please continue to support our sponsors, if you would, by using our dedicated URLs and codes. That's how we pay the piper here at Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. Today we had Factor, factormeals.com/OCC50, code OCC50 to get 50% off. And Athletic Greens, just go to athleticgreens.com/dragon for a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Again, links and codes for today's sponsor in the description of this episode. For more from me, Ross Bolin, listen to the Ross Bolin podcast wherever podcasts are played, or watch on youtube.com/@TheRossBolinPodcast. Speaking of which, if you'd rather watch our show instead of just listening, go to youtube.com/@OystersClamsAndCockles on YouTube to watch our show. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at WRBolen, at WRBOLEN. Mr. Dudley, where can people follow you?
Yo, follow me on Instagram, which will direct you to all of my other social mediums and ventures, at Barrett Dudley.
and go to bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch this holiday season. We've got Succession themed stuff, House of the Dragon themed stuff, The White Lotus, The Bear, the list goes on and on. Hit bolinmedia.com/shop and click on Oysters, Clams, and Cockles to check out all of our merch. Grab some for the member of the clam fam in your life or yourself this holiday season. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And until next time, please respect and enjoy the podcast.